everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and we are also archived on iTunes. You know, it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It is now in almost the end of September. The month is flying by. And we're coming up, you know, on the fall, and we think, oh, this is just a great time of year. It feels so good, you know. But then we're going to be coming into the winter where people are saying, oh, I feel this way, I feel that way. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not feeling good. I can't get out. It sort of seems like I think our feelings kind of ebb and flow as the seasons go. So that'll be interesting to ask our today's guest. Our guest is Tina Gilbertson. Her book is Constructive Wallowing, How to Beat Bad Feelings by Letting Yourself Have Them. You know, so many times we always say, oh, I'm thinking this, I thought that, and we keep saying, my head keeps playing this tape, or something keeps going on in my head has this. You know, we are really looking at the tower of health and medicine right now that's going to be coming down, and it's going to implode as so much as I can see it. And what's going to happen is that we're going to say our body is all one. Our mind is not just this little thing on the top of our head that we need a drug for. Our heart is not just this little motor inside of us we could take in and out and replace it and put parts in it, you know, or something else that we could turn around and say, oh my goodness, it isn't working great. Let's find a drug to fix it. We really need to know that all of this is part of us, and how can we do the best thing we can do with it right now? You know, with constructive wallowing, we talk about feelings. We're going to be talking about thoughts. I have a lot of friends, you know, that call me up and they say, you know, I'm really stuck. I don't know what it is. I'm just stuck. And then you ask them and they go about in their conversation and it's all about things that happened that they couldn't fix a long time ago. What happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or things they feel like they don't have control over fixing going forward. And I always ask them, and this has been always my best thing for every client, you only get 1 hour tomorrow. And I don't want you to do anything else all day, but you get to do 1 hour of complaining, bitching and complaining and say all those things that are in your head and just sit in your house and just say, I'm going to put a timer on. I get 1 hour. After that, I'm not allowed to think about that again. I'm not allowed to complain about that again. I'm going to go out and enjoy my life. You know, how many times do people take this 24 hours, 7 days, you know, 2 or 3 years, a decade goes by and they've still got this same mantra that every time you talk to them, it's the same thing. And you wonder, isn't it time that maybe I'll move on from that? You know, when I get up in the morning, it's, goodness, the sun's not out. It's not shining through. I wonder if it's raining today. When I get up, it is not. Oh, my goodness, I didn't do that yesterday. Oh, my goodness, I can't do that today. So really, let's think about what we think about the first time we set our foot out that bed. So I'd like to welcome our guest, Tina. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Dr. Jeanette. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And, you know, don't you think that sort of like the seasons, I think our feelings ebb and flow. In the summer, everybody's bouncy and giggly and talking to their friends. In the winter, they're complaining and moaning and groaning, right?
There is definitely an ebb and flow in our feelings. And I think it's great that you point that out. It's important to realize that it's natural sometimes to feel blue and down, just as it's natural that we're up and bubbly sometimes. I mean, what would be really weird is if our feelings were constantly predictable, always the same. That would be very strange.
You know, that is absolutely so true, because now that we've come into this last decade, I think where everybody is saying we're going to eat green, we're always going to have kale, we're always going to be meditating and be in that zen, and you aren't balanced. And, you know, I fought that for so many years. I'd always say to people, balance means today it's one thing, and another hour it might be something else. That's a balance, okay? I'm in the middle. Because, yeah, you know, when we think about it, can everybody be, we're all going to be sitting zenning here. Oh, my gosh, the vibration of the planet, it might disintegrate, huh?
Yeah, balance definitely means variety when it comes to life anyway, when it comes to human beings. You know, the Greeks said everything in moderation. the idea right. that we should be just one way, even if it's a loving kindness, wonderful way to be, is kind of not really affirming of what it means to be human, I think.
You know, absolutely, because like I said in the beginning of the show, you know, you have to allow those feelings. I mean, I have so many people that would say, you know, oh, well, you know, they told me to just put them away. I'm not allowed to talk about any of my things that are I might want to talk about when I'm around a family member or whatever. And really what that ends up being is the person ends up getting sick or they start sheltering themselves in place or they're not really engaged in life. And what the point is life anyway, right?
Right. And, you know, I think there are a couple of different levels of allowing that a lot of people confuse. I think there's a difference between allowing yourself to talk about things that are down and to complain to other people. That's kind of on an external level. But there's an internal allowing that really I don't think needs any limitations on it. And that is just, you know, allowing yourself personally, invisibly, privately, to really fully experience all of your feelings, no matter what they are. So there's a big difference between feeling down or blue and talking about it to someone else. Those are two different activities.
Absolutely. And you know what, too? I think there's also one time where I can say, I've said on the past shows, when women are really have that frustration and anger and they just simply can't figure out what to do with it. I've said to them, lay down on the floor, pretend you're a child, toddler, and just kick your feet, you know?
Yeah.
And it's an experiential exercise. Who is going to hurt? Absolutely nobody. Hey, you got exercise for probably the first time that day. It's not going to hurt. Well, there's great to do stuff, you know, internally, but sometimes you need that external thing to just get your motor going. You just need to start. There's probably been so much pent up that, hey, that's what you need to do. So there's a lot of varying different ways, and you and I are both saying that not one is totally right, not one is totally wrong. Whatever works for you is what is right for you.
Yes, and I do love that, kicking your feet like a toddler and throwing a tantrum. And, you know, that's something that you might do when no one is around, and that remains
right.
a personal experience. You're not going to do it at work,
I
hope. But,
right.
But, yeah, you need to have permission to express, at least for yourself, what you're feeling. And that I wouldn't put any limits on.
Because yeah, and it's so...
it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too, because, you know, as we were talking before the show, sometimes people just have to get this out. But the matter of what I call spewing, you're not allowed to spew. And when people say, what does that mean? That means that if whatever's coming out of your mouth, put your hand in front of your mouth, you feel that energy, that hot air coming out, it's not allowed to hit somebody else. Because if it's negative and it's coming out of your mouth, you're not allowed to spew it onto somebody else. And that's really vitally important. Because
it
it's not about them, you know?
Right, exactly. And that's the difference between emotions and behavior. Behavior can be violent and aggressive, and it can hurt other people, and that's what you want to put limits on, behavior,
right?
Because it is a social activity. Emotions are not the same as behavior. Emotions can't hurt anybody. So if I'm really, really mad and I go off at you and I start calling you names and telling you that it's your fault, that's not an
right.
emotion. That's a behavior.
Right.
And I'm accountable for that, and that can be right or wrong, bad or good. But if I'm secretly sitting and just having a feeling and feeling victimized, that's not a behavior. I'm not acting that out. I'm not putting that on anyone. And because it's a feeling, it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. It's kind of irrelevant because feelings don't exist in the same sphere as behavior, in a moral sphere, because feelings are not by choice, unlike behavior. I argue, and a lot of people would disagree with me, that we don't choose our actual emotions. At least that's my experience. I don't experience myself as choosing to be upset about something. In fact, if I could choose, I'd rather not be upset, ever.
Right.
But
well,
I,
you know,
I think
a lot of times, too, with women, with men, they'll say, you know, you're making me angry. And then everybody comes back now and they say, no, I can't make you anything. And then really what that frustrates the person more, but maybe it needs to frustrate that person more till they figure out that what they should say is, I am angry. It's not you making me angry, or I am angry at something you're doing, but you can't make me that, right?
Yeah, and people in relationships can find their own language together, but there's an important message there, which is that there's something going on between us that's upsetting me. But before I engage in that communication with the other person, I need to own it. I need to know, okay, I'm upset, and I need to know why. I need to have a conversation with myself first.
Right.
Otherwise, instead of owning the feeling, I'm just throwing it onto my partner. Here, you deal with this.
Mm-hmm. And I think so. We've covered so much already. I mean, you can't spew on other people, number one. Number two, you really need to be able to pay attention to yourself and be able to release it, you know, but also that you need to not carry it with you forever. You know, we've gotten into this decade, too, of, oh, write it down on a piece of paper and burn it. Okay, that works for some people. That does not work for 99.9% of the people because they aren't there yet. They haven't gotten to that level where it just will banish from their being. They don't really know what that means, so it really is an ineffective passage. But it is very effective for maybe several million people. So we're not dissing that. So don't anybody take we're dissing that. That's great for some people, but there's other people, too, that need to find a more effective way to be able to get it outward. Because writing it down sometimes does work. Writing it in a book sometimes does work, you know? I used to have this saying, my troubles are great, they're all behind me, they're just stuck to my butt, that's why it's so big. I was always my best, that was my best line. Everything is stuck to my butt, so that's why. But, you know, and then it would be funny because then I would have a divorce and, hey, don't you know my butt went away? Wasn't I right? Just magically disappeared. So you have to think, you know, gosh, there's something to this holding on things. You know, we just don't need to hold on to everything.
Yeah, I think that writing down and burning it thing is great. If it, as you said, if it works for you, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, including myself, that's just sort of magical thinking. Well, if I put my feelings on paper and burn them, then they should be gone. And I can actually use that to criticize myself. Oh, well, why couldn't I let this go? I burned it. I'm supposed to be letting it go. It's supposed to be gone. What's wrong with me that I'm holding on to it? And I don't think people choose consciously to hold on to feelings. Clearly, they don't choose it consciously. And even I don't think they choose it unconsciously. I think feelings hold on to us until they can be healed. And feelings heal through compassion. And if you can't get that compassion from someone else, you definitely need to be able to give it to yourself. Because someone needs to know how hurt you've been. And someone needs to care in order for that hurt to resolve.
And I think that's where the big swallow of people writing books these days and self-publishing, I think there's a lot of people that are saying, I can't find it anywhere else. I can't identify it anywhere else. It's not sufficing for me to find it outward places, you know, that compassion or that love or that caring. So people are starting to write these things down. I mean, I get authors, you know, all the time. I probably get about 30 books a month to review, you know, for shows. And I get them in print, and I know and I can feel it, you know, that somebody's just got to get it out there. Even myself, I've got thousands of pages written here. Hey, they're still sitting on the desk, but it's there, you know, and you look back and you say, you know, maybe that's where I need to find it. And, you know, and when you put it down, sometimes it just doesn't show up again. And I think I've, you know, some people find that different ways.
Yeah, definitely. People do find healing in different ways. And if you're someone who just by the act of putting a feeling down on paper helps it heal, then lucky. Then you're lucky, you know, to be able to do that. And maybe there's nothing else you need to do with what you've written. You know, maybe the act of putting it down was the important part.
Absolutely. So hey, you just gave me a good reason for my thousands of pages. And I know because there's been all these zillions of topics that I've done, and I've gotten a little way through it. And I said, there's no more energy behind it. It's finished. So I just close it up, put it in the file folder, and it's gone in the desk.
Yep.
It melted away.
Yeah. Yeah. So different people have different ways, and not everybody is verbal. Not everybody's going to be writing their feelings down. But even for people who are not particularly verbal, one thing that can be quite helpful in dealing with difficult feelings is to be able to name them. That's a big part of emotional literacy. It's just kind of putting words to feelings, not lots of words, maybe just one. I feel resentful. I feel remorse. I feel ashamed. Mm-hmm. I feel diminished. I feel disrespected. I feel rejected. Just putting a word to a bad feeling does make it feel less chaotic inside, because then you become a person who is having a feeling rather than just this dark entity of negativity that you can't really get a grasp on.
And that's when the thesaurus becomes your best friend, correct? Because, sometimes people will say, oh, my mother used to use that word, or my father used to use that word, or my husband used to use that word, or whatever. And they just needed a different word to be able to get it. They couldn't get at the core. It's sort of like it's that itch you can't scratch. It's not that quite word, but it's somewhere around there. So a thesaurus would be a great asset, because you can go through and say, that's the word, you know?
Yeah, I love the thesaurus. That's like my favorite word of all is the thesaurus. But also there are lists of feeling words available, you know, all over the internet and in lots of books, including mine. And there are many, many different words for feelings. A combination of a list of feeling words and a thesaurus, and away you go. And it really, really can help. It can be very soothing just to be able to label an emotion, as long as you're not doing it in an overly intellectual way where you're moving away from the feeling by sort of intellectualizing it and distancing yourself from it. So it's kind of a fine line there between intellectualizing and just sort of being lost in something you can't name.
And also about creating a fantasy of it, too, because then you're really into Cinderella land, where you're not really in touch with what is going on with yourself. You're maybe just creating that which you'd like to be able to present as you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it almost doesn't matter what the story is around the emotion, as long as you validate the emotion itself, because once you have a feeling, it's really too late to choose another one. That's the one you've got. And so I think the only choice at that point is to say, yes, I feel ashamed or whatever it is. Or say, no, I just don't accept this. No, I don't want to have that feeling. That's your only choice, yes or no. Do I accept my reality, or do I struggle against what's true for me?
Really? So let's talk about how we get started. You know, there's different choices in different age groups, I think. My kids are in their 20s and 30s, don't seem to have these issues. I'm finding people 40s and overs are having more of these, and way more as you get older. You know, how do they get started? Because, you know, hey, a toddler will tell you in 2 seconds what they think, and so will the ones in their 20s, you know.
How do these other
people get started?
Well, I see a lot of people 50 and over who come to my talks and my classes. And so, this is a generational thing to some degree. I mean, there are still children being born today who are going to be raised by parents who are not going to talk to them about feelings and are not going to encourage them to express them. But as a group, I think people kind of 45 plus had expectations that they were going to be just kind of stoic, and if things aren't working, we don't talk about that. We just put our shoulder to the wheel and we move forward. And, you know, there's a certain stoicism expected. And so first step, I think, is really just awareness. Oh, I'm having a feeling, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm having a natural reaction to something that's happened. So just normalizing, becoming aware that you're having a feeling and knowing that it's normal to sometimes feel blue is a simple but quite a big step for a lot of people who are used to putting their feelings aside.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of these people are having a lot of heart conditions these days. And I was recently speaking with a client, and she said, my mother was in the hospital for heart surgery, and the doctor went in and said, she's just sitting there and staring out the window. So we're going to put her on an antidepressant because she wasn't conforming. We all know that one. But anyway, what they assumed is that she should be up, bubbly, talking, blah, blah, blah. Really, what she was longing for was to get out there and get outside again. You know,
yeah.
So these people really don't have a context of being able to verbalize those things. But I think as we all become more awakened, or we become more energetic with our lives and just say, I'm not going to accept it for myself. And if I see it with one of my friends or relatives or neighbors, I'm going to say, hey, what about this? Wouldn't that be cool? You know, so if you were in that situation with that mother there, you could say, no, doc, she just can't wait to get out of here. Did you say we were leaving tomorrow? And then
mm-hmm.
she'd sit up and smile. You know what I mean? So it's just about
yeah.
shifting your energy, shifting the question, shifting the terrain, was what I call it. It's just moving things around so that they aren't so stagnant, and see what responses you get or how you fit in there.
Mm-hmm. So when you say moving the terrain and mm-hmm. making the shift, are you talking about the way we talk about these things, or actually physically moving the person? You know, getting them outside.
How we talk about it. Yeah, how we talk about it. You know, like if I had said to that doctor, she wants to be outside, she would be, I mean, their eyes light up like crazy, you know. So you've mm-hmm. just shifted it without actually saying even anything to her. It just, it lifted the room. You know, we all know this context when we go into a newborn baby's room. Everybody can't wait. They're rushing in. They've got presents and gifts. It smells good and everything. People get older and they're sick or they're infirmed or they're at their last time. Everybody's standing out in the hallway saying, let me know when it's done. You know?
Yeah.
And you go, yeah. wow. You know, how invalid at the time of their life when they need the most validation, confirmation, and compassion. People have
yeah.
gone three sheets to the wind. So, you know,
yeah.
I really think, you know, by being in touch with this a lot sooner, I think we're really onto something, being able to communicate better.
Definitely. And you've really touched on something that is kind of a pain in my heart, which is the way our society devalues older people, that we get discarded
yeah.
after a certain point, it seems, unlike other cultures in the world.
Right.
And it's really an uphill battle to fight that. And one way I think that you're touching on to do that is to develop emotional literacy and to be able to communicate about feelings no matter how old you are, so that you can't
yeah.
be treated like a stump or a potted plant and have assumptions made about you.
And I think we always talk about the health on this show. I always try to tie it in with the topic. And I think this is the biggest thing. You know, we always say with Patch Adams when Robin Williams did that movie, you know, it's okay. You know, I know this man is dying today, but I'm going to walk in with a rubber nose and I'm going to say, did you have a great day?
Yeah.
Because, you know, this day is still here. You know, and if he says no because, you know, with the other, and you have to make light of life. You just have to. And I think really when you say constructive wallowing, it's you're doing that so that they can move out of those spots to be able to make light of their day. Isn't that the whole
right.
goal of everybody?
Yeah.
No matter what,
paradox.
You know, your work or my work or anyone else's,
yeah.
it's about making light of the day.
And making things better. But the paradox is that in order to get to a better place, and this is hard
yep.
to do, you have to move maybe toward deeper into darkness before there is the light. So
yeah.
Making room for the down days actually creates greater capacity for enjoyment after you get over that hump. And so for me, rather than walking into a room with a patient and saying, you know, isn't it a great day or something like that, I would inquire, you know, how is your day going? And then just
right.
kind of be with them where they are. And whatever they're holding out there, whatever is true for them, I would amplify that so
yep.
that say, well, I'm not happy today. I would be like, wow, you're having a really bad day. And they might say, well, no, it's not that bad. Or they might say, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty bad. And then I would go even
right.
further. And there's always an end to it if you are patient.
Yeah.
If you're patient, but many of us are not patient, we hear that and we're like, well, I don't want to hear about it. If you're going to be negative, I don't want to hear about it. And we do that to
mm-hmm.
ourselves, too. We don't have the patience to hang in there to get to the other side. But there is another side if you have the patience.
You know, I think we've become a culture of non-listeners. And, you know, I've always been a big proponent of listening. If you just stop and you look at someone for 5 seconds, just engage in their eyes and listen, you will hear more in the first 5 seconds than you've ever heard from anybody ever. Because really, when they're talking in the first 5 seconds, you're really formulating your answer. You aren't really listening to what they're even saying. You're just worried about what you're going to say next.
Right. And what a gift it is to give someone to truly listen to them, to drop the need for, oh, is it my turn soon? And and really just fully take in who they are, where they are right now, and what they're saying. It's a gift that's not commonly given. I think, you know, it's funny because it seems to cost us so much because we all want that so badly. We all want to be on the side of the one listened to. We need that so much. And throughout life, I mean, it's like we never lose that need to be deeply listened to. And I wonder if getting that a lot when you're a kid, which is the time of life when you are supposed to be given to rather than taken from, I wonder if people who get that a lot as kids have a greater capacity to give that later as adults. I mean, that would be a hypothesis that I would make.
Absolutely, but then you could look at the same hypothesis. Maybe they've been gotten so used to getting listened to that they can't listen to others.
I don't know anybody who.
Yeah, so I don't either.
I know people
Pardon?
Who desperately want to be listened to all the time, and they let you know it. But I don't know anybody who's really used to being listened to.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there's a difference between someone acting like you need to listen to me, and someone who is fulfilled by being listened to.
Absolutely. And, you know, and we always have these things that we say, oh, well, I don't want anyone to know my darkness. Well, that really isn't what you're saying. You're still just saying, I want to be heard. It doesn't matter sometimes what's coming out of your mouth. It just matters that you are hearing me. We all want our experience to be validated in this earth. That's why we're here. You know, we're just seeking out seekers. We're seeking out others to what we call our tribe. We're finding other people that walk, talk, and breathe like us, whatever that might be, you know. And that's so important for so many people.
Well, for all of us, we all need to feel like we belong. And when you say, it's funny to say, I don't want anybody to hear my, what did you say, to know my darkness or to hear my darkness? It's like saying, I don't want anyone to know that I'm human. Because ironically, that's what we share. Is we all have this shadow, we all have shame, we all have this some degree of sense that we're not enough, we're not okay. It's almost the product of a normal childhood to have some concerns about your adequacy as a human being. Just because, you know, when you're very young and impressionable, you're learning, oh, don't do that, do this, that's right, that's wrong. You're getting all these messages about how many things you're doing wrong. Even in the most loving way, the overarching message is, unless you're following directions and rules, you're going to get it wrong sometimes. And that's enough to give most of us a sense that, oh, we're not quite up to the task of just, it's not okay just to let it all hang out and just be ourselves and be human. And that's an okay message for a kid to get because, you know, they're being socialized into a society where they do need to behave and they can't just do what they want all the time. But by the time we're adults and we do know the rules and we know how to behave, we still feel like we're not allowed. We're not allowed to be ourselves. We can't relax and allow ourselves some leeway. So we walk around with this shared sense of, oh, I've got a dark side, and if anybody knew it, they wouldn't like me.
Right.
But that's
and
the
I
thing
think
that...
You, don't they bury that so far in themselves that it just transforms into Lord knows what, right?
The deeper it's buried, the more it controls you.
Mm-hmm.
The less aware you are of feelings of shame and inadequacy, the more your behavior is likely controlled by those things. So if you've ever acted out and regretted how you acted, there were unconscious things pushing you to do that, or semi-conscious things. So the more you become aware and pay attention to yourself and all of your emotions, the more in control you become of your behavior, the more choices you make consciously, the more options you have in relationships.
Well, don't you think sometimes, too, our darkness that everybody fears, if they ever knew that they just let it out or let just be who you are, mm-hmm. or just not put so much power and energy into that, that it, you know, it, like I had said to you before, sometimes violence, you know, is they're really trying to express their frustration, their anger, or something that's been inbred in them or something that's been pounded into them in their whole life. And mm-hmm. if they would really work out that, if it meant by in a room by themselves, you know, this is it, this is your room, do what you need to do until you're done, same as we said before with the writing, they would realize at the end that, hey, number one, it didn't kill me. I can let it go. It didn't take me down to, you know, it didn't tear my limbs off. It didn't totally rip me from one end to the other. I'm still a person. I'm still here. I can still think. But now all that power and that negativity doesn't have that power over me anymore.
I think that's really insightful, that you know, if we move toward that darkness and kind of let her rip in a safe way, we will discover that whatever's inside us can't kill us.
Absolutely. And you know that, though? I think so many people are so afraid to let go of that. But you know what? I think we always look at these rehab places or these places that people go, and then they bring their families in, and it's family week and blah, blah. And they say, oh, well, let's just sit here and we'll talk about it, you know, and share your feelings of how you feel to them. And it's like that, in my phrase again, remember we go back to the beginning of our conversation about if you put your hand in front of your face and you feel hot air, you're spewing stuff. So that's not the place to do it. You really need to do it by yourself if it's that controlling or ripping into you. You know, you just have to... You can't go around just spewing stuff at people. And I think that's where our culture has really gotten busy doing lately.
Yeah, I think, you know, spewing is a good way to put it. That is not the same as expressing emotions. Spewing is the opposite of owning. Spewing is the opposite of wallowing in your own feelings. Because when you wallow constructively in a feeling, what you're doing is you are acknowledging, I have a feeling. And you're not doing this with anyone. It's not a conversation. It's not something you need to tell your mother or anything like that. It's a personal activity. I am having these feelings. These are my feelings. I own them. I may feel victimized by so-and-so, and it's my business to fully experience this feeling I'm having of being victimized. It's not my business to go and try to make so-and-so feel guilty about it. That's a whole different activity. And what that activity entails, if I'm spewing at someone else, is I'm trying not to have my feelings. I'm putting my feelings on them. Here, you take my feelings, because I don't want them.
Right.
I don't want to feel them. I want you to take them away from me. But of course, that doesn't work. And it also creates problems in relationships. So I would say that spewing is pretty much the opposite of actually wallowing in your feelings. Even if people feel like, oh, you're spewing at me, stop wallowing in all those feelings because you're making it uncomfortable in the room. You know, there's a confusion there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Wallowing is private and no one knows you're doing it. Spewing is public and you can hurt people with it.
And I think sometimes that's why, let's go back to the writing part, maybe those really unconstructive things that you have to work out, you can put those down and burn those. Those might be a good place to do it because it's not spewing it onto someone else. You're not writing them a letter and letting it, you know, all this terrible stuff come out and giving it to them and then having them stand in there holding it. And that's a perfect example of what you said. You're spewing it out, handing it to them, and now it's in their pocket.
And
you know, that's not really.
Mm-hmm. That's not how you heal. You actually cannot heal that way. It's an attempt at healing, but it's an attempt at healing without fully going through the feeling yourself. You know, it's like handing it over to someone else so that you don't have to do that. But the sad part is if you've got hurt feelings or angry feelings, yes, you've already been hurt, and it may not feel fair, but you must feel them fully before you can be through with them, and there's no one who can help you with that. There's no one who can do that for you.
You know,
so it
and
takes
it's
a lot of
such,
courage.
It is, and it's such a complex thing, don't you think, that to say, oh, I'm just going to get to the other side of that, really? It's going to take some time. Oh, no. I read this course online, and it's going to get me out of it, and I'll be done by tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it may take.
We all like that one, you know. The guru has bestowed their words upon me, and I'm good.
Right. Well, and this is another thing that can be a little bit confusing, because the emotion itself lasts maybe a minute and a half. The pure emotion, not the thoughts about what happened, not the attitude, but a pure emotion at any given time lasts maybe a minute or a minute and a half. Now, if you're dealing with a major upset, you know, or a huge loss, obviously you're not going to work through that in a minute and a half. The point is, though, that each wave of the feeling that you have about it is manageable, at least in terms of time. So you can, I tell the story sometimes of when my dad died and how much anguish I felt over that. And the day that he died, you know, within an hour of his death, I felt terribly, terribly sad. And I noticed that just within a couple of minutes, I was leafing through a magazine and reading the magazine, genuinely interested. Oh, look what's going on. It was People magazine, and I was reading about actors and actresses and what they were doing. And this is just less than an hour after my dad died. It's because I had had the first wave of anguish for a minute or two,
mm-hmm.
and then my grief gave me a break, because it's impossible to feel that level of pain for a sustained period of time. It just, nature doesn't work that way. Nature doesn't work that way. If you have enough pain in your body, you'll faint. If you have enough pain emotionally, your mind or your heart or your soul or whatever the mechanism is will regulate that pain so that you don't take it on all at once. So I had my anguish. I read a magazine. The anguish came back. I cried some more. I read the magazine or watched TV. The anguish came back. So it came in waves.
Right. And that's so vitally important to know, too, because people say that I'm in it all the time. And what you don't want to have is to have naysayers around you that are fertilizing your anguish or fertilizing your pain. Now, in that situation, that was an event. But let's say that's now 20 years out. You still don't want to have those naysayers still around fertilizing that, you know, because then you really won't move through that. In other words, you're opening the door saying, here's my pain, can you all help me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then where do you go? Where do you go from there?
I don't think that feelings that are fully experienced can hang around for 20 years. I think what can hang around for 20 years is this non-constructive wallowing, which is going over and over and over what happened and how it affected me, how wrong it was, which is a mental activity. And it just makes me feel crummy, but it does not actually resolve the pure pain that was the result of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the only way you can feel bad for years and years and years is to refuse to feel as bad as you actually do. It's weird. It's like you accept a low grade pain instead of the full blast that you might otherwise experience.
It's sort of like a fever. It'll ebb and flow every time you take a pill or something to hold it off, but that sucker's coming back. As anything, it's going to come back until it explodes. And you know, you find that a lot of times. When I always talk to people about your feelings and your emotions, your thoughts, and how that really does have an effect on your health, people will walk in and they'll be facing things like cancer, heart attack, something really devastating might happen to them, or they could just break their leg, and that could be you would think that the world had ended for them, so that may be devastating for them. But if you keep going back to it, there's always something back there. you ask them, you know, just keep talking and listening and listening and listening and talking and listening. And eventually they'll come to, I never felt better since, or, oh my gosh, this thing just ruined my life. Mm-hmm. Or this thing, you know, is just, oh man, that just took me out. That just took me to my knees, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those phrases are so vitally important because that's where your really true healing work needs to be, not in trying to bother with, you know, how many IVs am I going to give you today, how many supplements, how many prescription drugs, because I'm going to save your life. What life am I saving, the one of your body or the one of your soul? Those are two different things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sometimes I think what might be going on in some of those cases anyway is that something was already going on when when the person's health went sour, and that incident, the broken leg or the diagnosis, serves as a linchpin, or not a linchpin, as something to hang all those feelings on, something they can point to, that's why I feel miserable, because of this thing. Now, finally, at last, there's something to hang on, there's something to hang that misery on, because they may not know why they felt so bad in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of impossible in that case just to turn a corner and say, you know, maybe my broken leg wasn't such a bad thing, until that misery is addressed at the root. The broken leg is going to serve as something to hang it on. So the broken leg is kind of a red herring, you know. I mean, it's truly a broken leg, obviously, but it's a red herring in terms of the cause of the feeling, you know, when the feeling seems out of proportion. Or
I think it also, it gives them a reason, too, also to always say, never since, or always since, or, in other words, but then they also fantasize into that area, too, and say, hey, you know, things were great before that, and you say, were they really? You know, it's always like, you know, women or men with a divorce, they'll say, well, yeah, I've been divorced 10 years, and maybe I should look at going back. Excuse me. But they'll, and you'll say to them, well, what was great about it? And they're like, oh, this is great, and that was great, and that was great. But I think instead of asking what was great, I think the first question would be was, what didn't work? Because by putting the greatness before what didn't work, it makes it seem like it was a better thing. And people walk around saying, oh, yeah, but he, you know, my ex-husband used to do that. My ex-husband used to do this. Or my ex-wife, she used to do that all the time, and you can't measure up and blah, 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 blah. But they forget all of the negative stuff that was the reason they got in that situation in the first place.
Oh, sure. So you got to wonder what's going on now that seems worse, you know, that's making them look back to it, to try to find a happier time in life and long for that.
Yeah, and I think our minds are really, we've had guests on the show before that we've talked about the global mind and the planetary mind, and that, you know, and that our brain, and that our thoughts really aren't our thoughts. It's all the bigger part of the world, and that, you know, there's like this streaming consciousness around the world, and it's just we pick little pieces of it and then we do something with it, you know. So are we really picking that, you know, maybe I might be, I stubbed my toe, so I'm angry today, but hey, I'm angry at you because I stubbed my toe because you didn't hurry up and open the door. You see how we've kind of like constructed a story around something that we've picked up.
Right.
And, you know, how we really just love to take things and make a fantasy out of it. I mean, who wouldn't want to be Cinderella? I mean, I texted my daughter the other day. Cinderella was on the TV, and the fairy godmother was there with Cinderella. And I clicked a picture of it, and I texted it to her, and I says, I'm looking for her. My daughter texts me back, LOL. I was looking for fairy godmother that day. But we all have to have that lightness and say it's okay, you know. And
right.
Because we don't want to always have to create stories around everything. Man, it wears you out.
Well, I think that we're going to construct stories because that's what our brains do. But I think what's important, in my view on this, is to construct a story that where we come out as good people, where there's a reason why we feel bad, whether it's the global mind, the planetary mind, something that happened 20 years ago, something that happened this morning, my hormones.
Right.
There's a reason. And it's not that I am a bad or ungrateful person.
Right.
I think that we miss something key when we fail to find compassion for ourselves in our feelings. Because we can't heal without self-compassion. That's a necessary condition, I think, for emotional healing. So if we're going to look for a story about our feelings, let's hope that it's going to be a story where we're the hero and, you know, yeah, we have these feelings and no wonder we have these feelings. And I know
yeah.
that that's counterintuitive and it goes against a lot of what's been said and written because we've been told, you know, that we're constructing stories that, and that's not helpful. And it's true, often our stories are not helpful. But since we're going to construct stories anyway, and since mm-hmm. we need self-compassion in order to heal and move on from icky feelings, we might as well construct a story in which we're the hero. Because,
yeah.
you know, I see as a therapist so much injured self-esteem in
mm-hmm.
people. So ready to be wrong, to be mistaken, to be inadequate, to be the ones who need to change. The people I work with are. And so I try to make room for people to be okay as they are and to deserve kindness. And I think it's incredibly healing.
You know, and actually, you know, I can say I did not grow up with any of those perks in place, nothing. And probably, I mean, I'm almost 60 now, and I could say I probably haven't even given those self perks to myself until this last, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years. But I caught myself probably in the past month saying this at different times. I would say, you know, what did I say? I said, oh, I survived. Or I'm happy today. Or I'm sad today and I'm taking time out. Or I had a fabulous day. And think little things like that, but that you wouldn't even consciously be bothered to actually recognize. And I found that it was important to consciously recognize those because they would take away the extra energy from anything other than that.
Yeah, good for you. I mean, it's never too late, I don't think, to give yourself the kindness and compassion and attention and empathy that I think we all need in order to be fully ourselves and to pursue our purpose in life.
Yeah, and so many people are always just looking for that. And, you know, they want to find it in the bottle. They want to find it in drugs. They want to find it, you know, in other people that aren't right for them. There's so many different places. And the world is such a just, it's every single thing or any single person or place or thing is different. And, I mean, in other words, there's so much individuality in the world that you won't be repeating the same thing, but you'll be repeating your same reaction to that to something. So changing your reaction to something, you know, and saying, you know, I see this person, that person I don't like, or this person I don't like, this person I don't like, this person I don't like, start saying they're all individuals. How could I not like all of them? I don't even know them. You know? So looking at something just a little bit more openly, I think, is a little bit easier.
And one thing that people might find it a little hard to be open to is this idea of giving themselves compassion and witnessing their own pain. What I've heard is people saying, well, I don't want to have to do that for myself. I want to find somebody who can give me what I need. I want to find somebody really nice who can be kind to me. And I think there's a fear that if they sort of give up and give themselves self-compassion, then they are giving up on ever finding someone to really love them. And I am very careful to tell people, you don't have to choose between giving it to yourself and having someone else give you compassion. It's not mutually exclusive. But somebody needs to care about you. Somebody needs to know when you're hurting, and somebody needs, that needs to matter to somebody. And at the very least, it's got to be you. And if you don't care about yourself, if you don't have compassion for yourself, you're not really going to be open to somebody caring about you or having compassion about you. It's going to feel wrong if somebody comes at you with compassion. You're going to be like, what's that? I don't have a receptor for that. That doesn't fit for me.
Right.
So you may not even notice the people in your life who are compassionate because there isn't a lock for that key. You know, there isn't a good receptor. So I think it's imperative if, as an adult, you're coming to self-compassion for the first time, it's imperative to find ways to open yourself to self-compassion so that you can receive compassion from other people.
And also understand, too, that just because you opened up and you're willing to receive it, don't think that everybody else around you is on that same level. You may need to be the first one in your tribe, more or less, to be able to do that so that other people could see what that looks like. Because not everybody, you know, has, as we've said in the show, not everybody has experienced it, nor has everybody know what it looks like.
Oh,
and you may find you may need to stay in that tribe. You may not need to stay in that tribe. You know, they may say, I'm not going to do that no matter what. And, hey, then that's telling you something. Or they may say, oh, can you show me something more of that? So there are a lot of variables there.
That's for sure. And I always say that, you know, the price of, it's such a shame that when you make headway in any kind of personal growth, you do not get a medal or a ribbon.
Yeah.
More often you get pushback and you get anger as a response. You know, people in your life liked you the way you were. And so if you become a gentler, more self-compassionate person, that may confuse them, that may make them uncomfortable. They may push and test. They may not be able to tolerate being around a gentler, more self-compassionate person. But the hope is that, so it's a shame because you're trying something new, you're taking baby steps, you feel wobbly, you could really use the support, you know, in making a change. And instead, you're getting people trying to push you over when you're trying to learn to walk here. But ideally, when, you know, a good outcome is that you have the determination, you stick with it, and you actually raise the consciousness of the people in your tribe. And they point to you, maybe silently, maybe you never hear them say it, and they say, wow, look what she's doing. Maybe I could do that. Maybe it's okay.
Absolutely, and I think you have to listen for key words. Sometimes you just have to be open and aware and allow and walk away, and then just don't expect to be always feeling that back or getting that back. But you'll hear simple keywords like, you know, I think I heard you say this several years ago, or didn't you share this with me at one time, or I went to do something and I heard your voice in my head. You know, I get that all the time. And people would say, didn't you tell me that decades ago or something like that, you know? Where the funniest part is now that there's social media, I'll put something out, and it's something I might have been telling my kids, like, you know, forever and a million years. And so all of a sudden, like maybe 2 or 3 months down the road, my daughter or my son will say to me, you know what I read on social media the other day? And I'll go, oh, you must have been reading my post. But they don't want to validate where it came from, but it was the exact post. They had it word for word. It's something I had written, and it was just so funny. So you have to know that when you're putting your graciousness out, or you're allowing, or you're open, and those things are flowing out, they will stick somewhere. It doesn't matter where or how, they'll stick.
Yeah, and then you just have to deal with any feelings that you have of not being recognized. I mean, I know that feeling of, you know, speaking up in a meeting, being the first one to say something, and then, you know, half an hour later, someone else says exactly the same thing, and everyone says, that's brilliant. Let's go.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Yeah. There's you have to be a pretty big person in that moment to say, oh, good, that idea had value, and I'm just glad that in some way it's getting the recognition that the idea deserves. I mean, it kind of galls you, doesn't it, when, I mean, the lack of recognition, we're human, we have feelings about that. So that's something that, you know, we could constructively wallow in. We could just say to ourselves for a minute, I wish I could get the recognition for that. And if we could
wallow in. Do you know what I had decided? I turned it around and I had said, isn't that great? Because every time I do it, I know it'll stick on someone and someone will come up and say it. So my job is already done. I landed that seed someplace.
Right.
It's eventually going to come up. But I'm a seed spewer. So if you can think of yourself as that, you'll know you have a good job done.
Yeah, that's big of you. And you know, in a good moment, it's easier to be a big person. But I want people to forgive themselves if they're listening and they think, well, gee, I can't be like Dr. Jeanette. I can't just sow a seed and then not get recognition for it. That's okay. You know, you're human if that's the case. So. Yeah. Just have the feeling.
And I think that's why we're talking about it. And I think I would say to them, please do buy your book. I mean, Tina, could you tell us about your website and your book and where you could purchase it? That would be great.
Sure. So the book is called Constructive Wallowing, How to Beat Bad Feelings by Letting Yourself Have Them. And you can read about the book at constructivewallowing.com. That will take you to my website. The book is available everywhere that books are sold, so you can get it at your local independent bookseller, you can get it online, you can go to the library and check it out. You may need to ask your library to order it if they don't have it yet. But you can also read a lot of articles online that I've written on my blog about constructive wallowing. And you can get to my blog through my website. Again, a good page to get into that is constructivewallowing.com, and then just look for the blog link on the side.
Well, Tina, can you believe that we have gotten to the end of the hour? It is just blown by us. Didn't I tell you?
Yes, you did. It does go fast.
It does. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. It's been a pleasure having you with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation, and I hope that people have heard something that they can take away with them today.
Absolutely. We sowed those seeds, didn't we?
I hope so, yes.
Great, thank you. So if you'd like some more information about Tina Gilbertson, her book is Constructive Wallowing, How to Beat Bad Feelings by Letting Yourself Have Them. Please do check out the book. It is a great book. There's a lot of dialogue in there. There's summary at the end. There's also some areas where you can fill in, check the blanks. There's a lot of exercises in this book, too, where you'll be able to work through what she is saying. And also, please do check out her website. It is constructivewallowing.com. It is on today's show page on the bottom of the listing. And please do check out her website, and you'll be able to find out a lot if she has blog entries there and everything. So it's really great having you with us today. We're talking about wallowing, about feelings and thoughts. If you're really getting stuck, this is Dr. Jeanette, and what we are talking about is after January 1st, I will be having a group for 50s and older. So that is for myself, I'm almost 60, and all women and men over the age of 50. We're going to be working into this. Major goal, you're not going to die alone. Number two, we are going to be heard. Number three, we are going to have support and compassion for each other. We're going to do that in all realms, medical, healthcare, natural health. We're going to be talking about dental. We're going to be talking about lifestyle, about how to have your plans in place for end of life. We're also going to be talking about, hey, you know, I really need help right this second. So we're going to be doing a lot of that. It'll be a membership-only based group. Please do listen for further information or check out my website, outoftheboxhealthcare.com or drjeanettegallagher.com. So thank you so much for joining us today. Please do check out our guest today, Tina Gilbertson. Her book is Constructive Wallowing, and have a wonderful day.